10 good minutes for our YouTube audience. Please subscribe to the channel. We'll do this throughout the playoffs and the days where you have games. We're not taping a traditional podcast. Denver takes game five. The series is 3-2. They are very much alive in the series because of Minnesota's injuries. I can't wait for game six. And of course, like everybody else, you feel like if it goes back to Denver, if it looks anything like it did last night, then Denver's going to find a way to survive, even if we're all kind of like looking at Denver going, did they figure it out or did Minnesota lose its best player and one of its other starting fives in DiVincenzo? And a reminder too, that five with Randall, DiVincenzo, Jaden McDaniels, Rudy, and Ant, that is by far the most played lineup in the NBA this season. Like, I think 200 minutes more than the Knicks lineup. And it's just a lot to ask of this thing, this one certainty you had, even if it was somewhat underwhelming based on our expectations, something that we covered on Monday's pod of like, look how Minnesota finished after the All-Star break and now look at them up 3-1. But it was all kind of like TBD because you'd expect Denver was going to go back home and win last night's game. And they did, even with a late push from Minnesota to cut it to 10. And the starters are out there. I'm like, is Minnesota going to find a way to get this one? And Denver's like, all right, enough of this. And then they went on their own little 10-0 run, I think. So there was really two things, but it's the same thing that I was looking at last night. And that was finishing in the restricted area. Through three quarters, the television broadcast showed a chart that had Denver at 24 of 30 in the restricted area against Minnesota through three quarters. That was on the television broadcast. I was looking up the shot chart stuff this morning on NBA.com. The numbers are different than what they had on the TV broadcast, but that's a staggering number. But I'm going to kind of go through and compare some of the shot chart stuff in that restricted area because we know what was alarming in game three was when the series turned in that second quarter in game two. But now with the injuries, it feels like it's turned again. But that game three was like, man, Jokic is just getting attacked relentlessly here. And that's despite his status as the best player in the world. It's certainly a real thing. And without Gordon on top of everything else, or a limited Gordon who's tried to play in the series, you're like, how's this going to go? I remember with the MVP vote where I had Embiid over Jokic. I didn't feel great about it at the time. I still don't know that I'll ever feel great about that vote. But there was a moment when I was debating all the different factors and how I wanted voted for MVP that season. It's like, man, when somebody has the ball and they're attacking and Embiid is lurking at that stage of Embiid's career, it's like there's a little bit of apprehension. Like Embiid's providing a presence that Jokic is just not going to provide. He's always going to be in the right position. He's always going to be smart about it. He's always going to try. So I think he's a little bit better in that way. But game three was just like, oh my God, this is just a waterfall of drives at Jokic every single time. And there's just not any resistance there. So if you look at last night on NBA.com, the chart on NBA.com shows that Denver for the game finished at 85%, an 85% clip at the rim. So inside the restricted area against Minnesota. Minnesota finished at 67%, which isn't some absurd number, but it's obviously still good because you're right next to the basket, but it was nine less makes than Denver. So if we go back to game three, when Jokic was just, it was Jokic season, Minnesota was 28 of 38. Those 28 makes at the rim in game three are double what Minnesota had last night. And there are just so many times throughout a series where you'll see something game one, game two, and you're like, oh my God, like this is a huge problem. Can they keep doing this? An example I would use is there was an Atlanta-Milwaukee series from years ago where Brooke Lopez was in drop coverage because back then they just kept Lopez right next to the rim. So like there was a push for like Lopez defensive player of the year. And you're like, wow, look at like some of these rim protection numbers. Like look at all these contests, look at all this stuff. It's like, yeah, because he's never asked to go anywhere else ever. And so once I dug into it, I was like, yeah, sorry, absolutely not. But in that series, it looked like Lopez for a game. You're like, I don't think you can keep doing this. I don't think he can play in this. And then you're saying that about Budenholzer, who's like, guess what? I'm never changing anything. This is what we did all year. We're not changing this now. And so something that looked like a massive disadvantage, something completely glaring, something that needed to be fixed, it just played out differently, you know, the next game. And they were right. They were fine in what they wanted to stay with. So it's not like Denver fixed something all of a sudden, because I think that they were totally okay with giving up 3-point shots here. And Minnesota was terrific in the first half, 9-19 from three. Io is at 44% this year. I mean, it's just a ridiculous number. I think they're okay with it, even though he looked like Jordan a couple nights ago. Bones Highland, who has pretty good numbers traditionally from 3-point, you know, he's a little up and down, sure, but I'm sure there's a bit of a Bones Highland theory in that if this guy gets cooking early, his threshold for what's a good shot is probably going to get lower and lower, and that may work in our advantage. So there were just drives or something that was so glaring and that worked out really, really well for Minnesota at other parts of the series. It wasn't necessarily even there for him last night. Minnesota also killed themselves on turnovers. They gave up 35 points off of the 25 turnovers they had, which completely neutralizes any of the spacing, any of the stuff that they were getting from the outside. And, you know, even without Gordon, without Watson, this is what Denver's supposed to look like. This offense that's flying, especially off of turnovers. And it's kind of the perfect Jokic game because he's taken only 15 shots. That's really what he wants to do. He's still not hitting his threes, but everything was working in this one. Cam Johnson, 18 points. He had 40 points combined in the previous four games. Spencer Jones steps in, doesn't miss anything. 7-9 from the floor, 4-5 from three. I mean, if you're getting spacing from him and Cam Johnson, then it's going to open up everything else. Jokic doesn't feel like he has to force himself into shots that he doesn't want to take. And then everything offensively is kind of clicking for them. Rudy wasn't great last night. No offensive production whatsoever. Two finishes around the rim that were just a disaster, which is to be expected from him offensively. But I think defensively, this thing that we keep waiting for, like when is this going to look like the regular season Jokic-Rudy matchup? I wouldn't say it was that because Jokic didn't need to attack the way he's felt like he's had to in the past. And when I say attack, I think for Jokic, I mean just more shot attempts because he's like, I guess I'll just shoot more. But it felt like he went a little quicker. There was a turnaround bank shot that he had and it was like, oh, he just went as soon as he got the ball. Like he didn't let Rudy settle in and get ready defensively. Like I'm not even going to give him that chance. So that's something to look for there a little bit more. And you got Nas out there running around who looks like he's dealing with a couple different injuries, which is the last thing Minnesota needs. The Jaden McDaniels stuff, I'm totally fine with. I'll tell you, he's not always been my favorite. I think he completely disappears when he's not getting touches. I think he takes himself out of the game offensively. I think defensively, he's really good against some matchups and then other matchups. It's just not, it doesn't feel like it's as impactful. He always seems to be in the middle of something, but I think it's, for this series, these two teams that hate each other, and Minnesota seems to hate Denver more than Denver hates them, and him getting booed every single time he's touching the basketball because of the layup that he made at the end of game four, which I don't know why in the last 10 years this has turned into this ridiculous thing. Like maybe that one's a little egregious by whatever these rules are, but that stuff always annoys me. It's just kind of something that the other team can get mad about and feel better about after getting your ass kicked for 48 minutes. So, you know, when I see stuff like that, it's like, well, you know, you guys had 2 hours to address this, and now you're going to be all fired up about all this stuff. So I like Jaden's role in this series, and that's coming from somebody that probably thought he's been a little overrated with the extension and the way that he's talked about and all that kind of stuff. I think he wasn't good last night, but I think he's really important for them, and we'll see what kind of energy and production he brings when they get back home in game six. I'd put Jaden on my short list of like playoff up guys for me where, you know, OG all over again. I'm like, God, like a little embarrassed that when they made that trade, I was like, I think RJ is actually a more talented player. I'd tell you RJ is probably like a better offensive player than OG as far as talent, but OG is the better player. And then you add in the defense. So Scotty Barnes way up, CMB way up, Jamal Kane way up. So yeah, he's not the same necessarily, you know, as Scotty Barnes. I'm not comparing the two, but just feeling better about players because of what this playoff season means and how different it can be for so many of these players. Speaking of being different in the playoffs versus the regular season, Orlando up 3-1 on Detroit basketball. When Orlando wins a game, it still feels like they lost. I get so frustrated with this team. This is a me thing, okay? So I'm not asking you even to agree with me here. I'm just telling you, like, our whole thing about the Magic, and Cerruti's going to jump in here in a second because he grew up in Connecticut, so of course he's a Magic fan, but I like this team. I love how they've drafted. I think it's so talented. I think their 1-7 is ridiculous. They should have been a top-4 seed in the East this year. And by the way, with this young group, they've been making the playoffs. So they haven't done anything of significance, but this young team, like, they've been in the playoffs. It's not just, hey, how come that team's supposed to be so good and they can't even get out of the play-in? And then you have this year where it's the Boston lost the regular season against a G team, and then the Bain substitution stuff in game 82. The Philly game, you're like, what are you guys doing? And then they completely dismantle Charlotte. And you're like, all right. But at the time, you go, you know what's weird about this Orlando team? Because they're so talented. That's why I get so mad at them. Is that, like, this isn't a great matchup, I don't think, for Detroit. So I went to bet the over 5.5 on the series. The funny thing is, you end up losing if they win it in 5 against Detroit. The reason I get so mad is that their offense sucks. And it's not just a numbers thing. It's like you have all these guys and does it not fit? And yeah, Paolo's taken a turn in the wrong direction this year. As a Paolo guy, I have to admit it. I get probably more and more frustrated with him just going like, what are some of these possessions? But they hunt the switch. They get the switch if they get it, right? Because sometimes people fight over the screens. And then they don't do anything. Nobody cuts. They wait, they like reset against the switch, and then everybody's stuck. And then it leads to some of the worst shot selection you're going to see from a group that's this talented. You know, Paolo's always got a handful of shots in there. You're like, what was that? Suggs took a 3 in the right corner last night where I think his main priority was to see how quick he could get the shot off. Like, wasn't even close to being settled. Like, these guys will start taking some horrible shots. I mean, I know Bane's made most of these in his career, but sometimes he'll take a 3 where you're like, that's what you went with this early in the shot clock? And then they completely forget about Bane. I just don't understand what's wrong with having some sort of thing where Paolo is cutting off the ball, which would bring defensive attention to the paint, because if he gets it close, he's at the very least going to the free throw line. Although he had those 2 free throws last night where he's telling the crowd to quiet down after they're yelling, ref, you suck, and then he misses both free throws. Like, maybe they should have kept yelling. Franz, I think, despite going out of the game last night, what I was seeing from him last night was a reminder of like how good he can be on the ball. So you have all these different things that you can play with, like a Paolo cut brings defensive attention. Bane off the ball comes up. Depends on who has the ball in his hands. Are they playing off of Suggs? Are they playing off of Black? Do they have to play up on Franz? Or do they give him spacing because he doesn't feel like he can hit anything from 3? But anything after the first thing. And the crazy thing is that I've watched them enough this year that they had a stretch. I was like, oh, they're actually like running some stuff now. But whatever it is with this team, when they get to like their default mode, right? And anybody that's ever like played any kind of basketball, like, you know, the one thing that you're like, all right, I feel pretty good about doing this, but this might be like the only good thing that I feel, or the only thing that I have in my bag that I feel good about. As a team, it's just like, okay, here we go. Like, let's get some sort of switch here at the top. And then it's like 4 guys just go, I wonder what he's going to do, man. I wonder what he's going to do. The great thing for Orlando is that when you play really great defense, and that's who they are, they can play great defense, and you're playing a team in Detroit who is really easy to figure out how to defend, you can still win a game, and you can still win a series. And they're up 3-1. Orlando is up 3-1. And there's a whole lot of Detroit, like, if this doesn't work out, if Orlando takes them out, it still seems crazy to think Detroit can win 3 games in a row with that offense against Orlando. So, like, it feels like this is about to happen. And we'll do a 1-8, like, which is the worst one, which is the most excusable one here. But Detroit is lost, and I'll get to this closing group here. There's a lot of Cade hate today, 7-23, 8 turnovers. The turnovers are bad in the first half, no question. The rest of it, though, people need to chill out. This is so hard for Cade. I can't believe you could watch this game last night and, like, get on Cade's case, but these are the rules. This is what happens. Like, oh, I thought this guy was in the MVP conversation. Oh, this guy's going to be first-team All-NBA. We're catching a ton of shit because of the Tatum-Cade question of, like, if they went up against each other in the playoffs, and now Detroit might not even be there. It's just the natural progression of like the status of an NBA player who got eliminated early and who kept playing. It's kind of like the Halliburton thing where no one ever thought of him as a top 10 player in the NBA. And then they're in the finals and it's like, of course he's a top 10 player. And maybe he is when healthy, obviously, 10, but nobody was saying it. No one said it the entire year. And then all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, what are you, an idiot? You didn't think Halliburton was a top 10 player? And we're like, ah, this seems new. Anyway, Cade, I went through the fourth quarter. He took five shots. He missed all five. The last one was a desperation three down eight with like 11 seconds left. So that one doesn't really even count. I'd say out of those five shots, like he's trying, like he could have taken 10 if he wanted to. He might have been better off taking 10. Maybe one was good. I'll say that one was good. And so that's a bad miss. But the rest of it is him going really quick because he just goes, you know, the longer I wait around here, the better that they're going to collapse on me. There's one drive where four different guys in Orlando are guarding him. They're not looking at anyone else. And it was a question I asked James Edwards, who used to cover the Pistons and was around when this group was being put together. Now he's national and does the Knicks for the Athletics. So we enjoyed having him on. And I think I asked somebody else this question, too. It's like, how many number one seeds with 60 wins? Because that's who we're talking about when we're talking Pistons. How many one seeds don't know who their closing five is as they get into the playoffs? And that's what Detroit is doing right now. Let's go through it. Game one, fourth quarter, like the other guy is kind of how I'm talking about this. So we understand like it's Cade, it's Duren. Thank God for Tobias Harris, who's been pretty steady, you know, a guy that is capable of going, did he play tonight? So Harris has been at least something else that Cade can hope he can plug in for like 18 points in some of these games. But game one, Danis Jenkins was the other guy, played 9.5 minutes. Now he's not the other guy. Game two, Duncan played 10.5 minutes. And these are fourth quarter stuff, right? So game one, Danis plays 9.5 minutes in the fourth quarter. Now he's not in the picture. Asar played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter in game one. So now he's kind of back in the rotation, which is leading to the lack of spacing on top of everything else. So Bickerstaff searching here. So back to game two, Duncan Robinson plays 10.5 minutes. In game three, Duncan Robinson plays 9 minutes as that, who's that fifth guy. Game four, Duncan Robinson played 3 minutes and 21 seconds in the fourth quarter because Caris LeVert, who has played this entire series and had not played any minutes in any fourth quarter in either game one, two, or three, he played 9 minutes in the fourth quarter. So their solution last night was Caris LeVert. And I'm telling you, if that's your solution, then you have a much bigger problem than maybe the people on the outside realize. Shout out to Ja Morant. He and Jaren Jackson in attendance for this game. I thought that was cool. Checking in on their guy, Desmond Bane. But I think the highlight for Ja was he got to do the gun salute the entire game and just fire off the handguns. And I don't think he can get fined because he was a citizen and he was just hanging out, watching the game, firing away, and probably wondering why Bane is not used more when Orlando's offense is going into the gutter, despite the 3-1 series lead. Let's bring in Cerruti for a little magic minute and then the mailbag.
Yeah. So the funny thing, I agree with all the things you said about the Magic. I feel like they could still be. But the funny thing about the series is, they're up 3-1, and I don't even think they played a great game. Not even once. Like, they are kind of still a mess. They're just playing really hard, and they're paying the ass to play against. And they're obviously a matchup nightmare for the Pistons. I tweeted, I feel bad for Cade. And I you know your thing, he's getting a ton of hate. We obviously are getting a ton of hate because of that thing. I would just like to remind everybody that we were reading an email, right? Okay, I'm reading an email of a guy making a point about Cade and Tatum. Now, right. I agreed. My I don't think if we're drafting the league right now. Well, who knows? I mean, maybe you would. Some people would. But like the idea that like I would take Cade over Tatum, I don't know. My point was, hey, Cade has had to go through a lot of adversity that Tatum kind of has not, obviously pre-injury, with just the team and the organization being ass, that I think that means something to me and that like he's asked to do more. And I would say that who beyond like maybe Jokic is asked to do more for his team solely than Cade is. And so again, you can shit at us because he's had a ton of turnovers. I get it. He's not. It's open season on Cade, but Cade is asked probably to do more than that. Are there five guys that are asked more to do than what Cade is doing this season for the Pistons? So I think we need to show a little respect to Cade because like Asar and Duren, it's a mess. Like he's going to the paint. There's nothing there. He's got to kick it out. The transition turnovers are a problem. But like, if you're listing the reasons the Pistons are in this situation, where is Cade on that list? It's not that high, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'd be great if he made more shots. It'd be great if he had less turnovers. His job is really hard. I think five feels like a lot when you're watching what the playoffs are like and going, oh, okay. So like some of these offensive issues and the lack of spacing and this lineup that they still don't really know what they want to do. Because as great as Asar is defensively, if you have Duren and Asar out there, like they don't care about Duren. They don't, they're not worried
Jalen
about
Jalen Suggs
Duren.
Is allowed to be an absolute maniac, and he can go one of 13 last night and still be a plus 20 and be awesome in the game because he basically doesn't have to guard Asar.
Yeah. So, you know, the Danis thing, they're like, oh, you know, because I would watch it going like, look, even if they were winning the series, we'd be talking about Detroit needs some other guy who they can trust with the ball in his hands to go get them a bucket when all the attention is on Cade. And Harris has done more than I would have even expected in that role for certain times. But Duren is a dependent offensive player. You need to do something to then get him in a position where he feels like he's comfortable. And his jump from last year to this year is terrific. Is there another jump there where it feels like he's a two dribble guy kind of getting into his stuff? You know, I'm not ruling it out, but like that's another huge leap for somebody who came into the league going like, I guess he's just going to rebound and rim run and, you know, out hustle everybody. And so I think I ended up voting him all team, all NBA third NBA. Team. Cause I felt good about it. You know, I don't regret it now, but it's like, damn, you know, this stuff tightens up and it becomes harder and harder. So,
yeah,
I think we covered it with them. Like even, yeah. I guess I would just say like, even if they had won a cup, like gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is, you know, technically still in play here, everybody already knew it's like they need something else though. They need a really special player. And I think that's why you look at the Bane acquisition and go in Detroit would love Bane right now. They'd be like,
they'd love Io. They love, yeah, I mean,
right.
CJ McCollum. Like there's like a ton of guys. So you could be like, that would actually be a really, really productive guy for the Pistons to have right now. But all right. Hey, you learn your lesson. Do you think really quickly, do you think like is Duren stock, how bad is it? Like, is he not going to get paid? Like, are the Pistons just going to be like, actually, wait a second. No, we need to like move you. Like how drastic do you think it is?
Well, I mean, what he's eligible for could be absurd with the all NBA thing. And then, I mean, you can't pay him that number. I'd imagine he gets the normal kind of, hey, we took you in the lottery and you've been really good. You know, it's probably one of those deals. As soon as the deal gets done, you're like, oh my God, you know, people were shitting on the Scottie Barnes deal being like, he's a nice player. But like now I feel, I mean,
people shit on every deal though. Like I don't know. It's a lot of money. Like everyone makes a lot of money. It's
yeah. I mean, people were like looking at the back end of the Booker stuff, and I was like, he's not going to be 40 at that time. I mean, $68 million is a lot for an NBA player for a season, but that's what it is. Cap goes up. Projection went down by $1 million.
Words to live by. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cap goes up.
Projection went. When I saw that was covered, that was one of those like wake up in the morning. I'm like, what's going on? The cap's going down. And then everybody was doing that hates the NBA, like a victory lap and be like, oh, this is the worst business ever. Like, look at this. And then I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, there's a smoothness. Like, wasn't there a softening of the whole thing? And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, people are making fun of the NBA because the cap projection is going to be $10 million more instead of $11 million more of an increase. I left that out of my ratings rant. I should have put that in. I just, you immediately tell on yourself when you go, you don't even know what you're taking a victory lap over. And it isn't a victory lap. All right, emails.
Yeah, we got three. We got two emails. And
how much did you love Ja last night?
I'm with you. I thought it was really cool that they were there to support their guy. And, you know, I know you have your thing with the Grizzlies, but, like, they were fun at a time. Like, they were kind of this, like, cool and exciting team to watch at one point. And it's, I kind of feel bad in some ways for Memphis fans that it went up in flames so quickly. And now
I feel bad for
Memphis
fans. Oh, yeah. No, my rants are not about Memphis fans. I just think that group was a bunch of losers.
A little too much dip on the chip, so to say. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. But I thought it was cool that they were there for Bane. I thought it was an SNL skit. Like they would do the guns thing of him on the sideline of like, what do we do? Like, do we suspend him? What's going on? Do we blur it out on TV? Like, it was just, it's like, okay, cool. You've learned nothing. So that's great. But
you know, when I say losers too, I'm probably talking about one guy, you know, because I like Bane. I love Jaren Jackson.
Yep.
I mean, who else am I really getting mad at here? Maybe some of the Dylan Brooks stuff, like when they went at it with the Lakers in that series and Dylan Brooks was doing all the poke the bear stuff. But then when they lose, he wouldn't talk to the media. So I was kind of like, What's up with that? I feel like I'm shorting OKC, by the way, in our 10 good minutes, but I think we'll have more time to talk about them as the playoffs continue. They were so good, even with Phoenix being out, man. The double big stuff that they were doing, SGA, this fourth quarter number from SGA. I have some thoughts, but I feel like, hey, they just moved on and it was a four game sweep again.
We'll have more time to get to them. This is a good transition, though. Gordon emails in. He goes, it was good to see John Triple J watching game four in Orlando Monday. As a Magic fan, I enjoy our announcer, David Steele's Is This Anything bit. It is a great bit.
I love Orlando's broadcast team, by the way. Dante, Jeff, shout out to those guys as well.
All those guys are great. Yep. Watching Ja look happy in the front row made me wonder if his value is distressed enough for the Magic to acquire him. I understand that you may need to call Bobby Marks segment on the show for questions like this, but could it work?
Just don't even call Bobby Marks. Yeah, this would be the dumbest thing you could do.
It's a hard no. It's a hard no.
I don't care. You don't have to buy a double electric guitar because it's on sale. You know?
Correct.
Like, oh, this will be in drop D and this will be in standard tuning and just look out. Look out.
Losing money not buying this. Yeah.
That'd be like not knowing how to play the guitar and then a double neck guitar is on sale and you're like, it is 60% off. I had to.
Yeah. Double the guitar.
Jimmy Page videos?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a simple no for me. So we could just move on. But yeah, shout out to the Magic broadcast team. This one,
Paolo and Ja coming down in a tie game with like a minute left. I don't want to see that, but
I would agree. I'd rather watch it as we are now than try that. This is from Twitter. This is from Dylan. He actually has two questions. Let's do this one first. Best trade, the McCollum trade, Kuminga, Io, or Luke Kennard. He called him Nard Dog. Best Nard acquisition. Dog.
I can't believe the Lakers got Kennard for Vincent in a second rounder. I can't believe it. Why wouldn't Atlanta? I think it's because they got Kispert. It's like the two white guy spacer rule. That's why when we had Duncan Robinson on, it was like, hey, you got Kevin Herter now. Like, were you kind of like, hey, buddy. And then Duncan's answer was incredible because my whole point was like, you should only have one fedora. And he's like, I think everybody should wear fedoras. So it's a great answer there. But there does seem to be a rule of like, we can't have two space white guys here. Like, what's going on? So maybe because they had Kispert, they could go ahead and do it. But Kennard is, did you hear that ridiculous story that he was a right-handed quarterback?
I did not, no.
Yeah, he's a right-handed quarterback in high school. And yet he shoots left-handed and he's like one of the single best three-point shooters in the entire NBA. So, and there's way more to him as we were able to see, but it also is kind of like some of these guys are so talented, but they're just not as talented as the other two or three guys offensively on the team. So it's like, you're actually not going to get to do all this other stuff. Like Sam Merrill, I think would smoke so many people one-on-one, but there's just not. He's just not going to have that many possessions.
He knows his role. Yeah.
We have Mitchell and Harden, buddy. Like you get Strus front flying around like a jet pilot ejecting himself from a plane. So I think it's CJ is the answer. What do you think?
Well, is the IO having to pay him the problem here, I guess?
I don't even want to talk about any of that. Like, let's just Who's the most important of the names that were just listed in that email?
Okay, well, Kuminga's last, even though this isn't like a, hey, it's Kuminga sucks thing. It's just, I think of those four, he's last.
On the whole, for the series, Kuminga has been a massive positive, even with the bad game 1-4. So,
but I think CJ's been more important to so he's not even the best trade on his own team. And then it's like, okay, between Kennard and Io, I mean, yeah, like I guess Are the Lakers, I mean, it's crazy to say this, are they where they are if they don't have Kennard? Probably not.
No, but I look at it as the whole of like, CJ has to save them at times in a way. And I know Io essentially did that in game four. I mean, it's an unbelievable performance. But I think over the course of like all the minutes in all of these games, CJ's the most important.
Yeah.
No pushback? You going with Kennard?
I just think like Yeah, you're right. Because if the Hawks don't have CJ, the series probably isn't 2-2 either. So it's probably got to be CJ. But I think it's he and Nardog are up there. And then Io's obviously got the one game.
Nardog
stole the. Yeah, listen. Great stuff there. So yeah,
did you like the Office episode when he gets a Nardog tattooed on his butt?
I did. I need to do an Office rewatch. It's been a minute. I know people. It's like a. I think I've only really watched it like twice all the way through.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know you're way up there. I'm not a big rewatch guy. I usually watch something once and I'm good.
I need something to fall asleep to, so it has to be something I've watched too many times, because that way I'm like, all right, you know, whatever.
And that used to be It's Always Sunny for me. I used to watch It's Always Sunny to go to sleep. Then I
Succession is a good one because it's never loud.
Mm.
It can't be like a loud show. Like Game of Thrones, you can't fall asleep to.
Ever heard of a torture place called scenes. California Pizza Kitchen? That clip keeps coming up in my feed.
Oh, does it?
Oh, yeah.
They have the spicy chicken.
Cajun pasta. Cajun. They make it just the
they
way I
it,
like it.
They make it. It's really good. No, it isn't, Craig.
Love it. Love it. Love it. All right, Dylan. Other question. This is a good one, too, because it's a follow-up on a previous thing.
He's a poppin' Jay.
Follow-up from our Castle Amen question. He goes, Castle or Cade today moving forward? Pick a running mate. That's the Cade stock is now way too low now. That's insane.
Yeah, I think you could foul out Castle if you wanted to call everything on him offensively and defensively. You just go, hey. And another part of the Castle evaluation is you can't do this before the draft because you don't know. I mean, there's guys who are like, hey, this guy's going to get to the free throw line a lot or whatever. But it's like, is he going to figure out how to get fouled all the time while also not getting called for as many fouls? Like, he's already in that group of the officials that are like, we can't call everything if this guy would play 12 minutes. And it's good. It's great for the Spurs. He's been fantastic. But he, at a very young age, like, that's something that's, I don't know how to, like, it's not something, hey, now this class in 2026, I'm trying to figure out who can figure out the officiating part of it the quickest and take them up another level. But he has figured out this way to be incredibly physical offensively to his advantage, and then also being incredibly physical defensively, which makes a little bit more sense based on who he was at UConn. But I didn't think that watching him at UConn, granted it was limited, they had a million options, he's a freshman, so he wasn't going to get a ton of touches, but he was somebody you could probably, was it the Purdue game where they just were like, we're fine with you, like, we don't even feel like you're any kind of threat. And then they were selling him as a point guard before the draft, and I thought that was kind of crazy because nobody ever really thought of him as a point guard. And now he's just killing guys. Having said that, I don't think that I'm ready to say I'd take him over Cade.
Nope. Last one, Lucas. Hello, Ryan. Love the show. All the way from Spain. Shouts out. My question is
San
about...
San Sebastian, just south of Biarritz over the border.
Give you some other recommendations for food. He's got a good salad place there. Who knows? Question is all about the Jokic hate that he has received this week. It was earned in terms of performance in the first round. But honestly, I think it's crazy to go revisionist history about his entire career and even his 2023 ring. Why is he hated so much? Your take on this is what? Thanks, Lucas.
This is what it's become. I mean, sometimes, I don't know when it shifted, but it used to be if you were really good and you lost in the playoff series, you just lost in the playoff series. And like, that was kind of it. I don't know that we did a complete audit of Kobe's career after they got swept by the Mavs in a series. You're like, you guys are just going to get smoked here like this. Like, you know what he was doing TV shows the next day going like, I wonder if we should reevaluate what we think of Kobe. This happens even with like a Steph. Steph will have a bad playoff series or something. I mean, I know he's been in kind of Mr. Playing here recently, and he got hurt in the Minnesota series last year. But like, if Steph has a bad game as a huge Steph guy, then it turns into like, oh, you got nothing to say about Steph. It's like, you feel like there's certain guys that have done enough where we don't have to go like, I wonder if this guy's good. And I'd put Jokic in that category as well. And look, Jokic has had the belt here as the best player in the world for multiple years. And when you have that, then you just become a much bigger target. And when then it's going this bad as it was there for a couple games, and he was fantastic last night. It's just what it is now. It's just the way that it's going to work. The same way, like, if Cade doesn't get out of the first round, it's going to be like, wait a minute, is this guy that good? And sometimes I think it applies, Now, I'm not saying like every time somebody with a high profile has a disappointing playoff series, it's not a fair question, but we do it too much with too many players, and then we want to start going back even further. Like, say Boston were to lose in the first round of Philadelphia, it's not going to happen. Then maybe they lose in the second round. Say Boston loses in the second round. I don't know, because they very well could be in the NBA Finals too, because the rest of this East thing at the top is just like, I don't know if I'm in love with any of these teams now. But you could go back and be like, hey, let's look at that Boston title in 24. Like, Cleveland hurt, Pacers hurt, you know, just on and on and on. You could start and be like, and then it's Dallas, and Dallas wasn't really even that good of a team. And, you know, then they lose to the Knicks in 25, and, you know, they were going to lose the series anyway. You could just start doing this stuff. And sometimes I think it's actually like interesting, but there is a rush to, when something goes bad for an NBA player who has these high profile NBA players, there's this rush to be like, is there any way we can knock them down a bunch of pegs? And I think part of it's because Jokic is a white guy. So that's always going to be something that is, you know, in the NBA, the way the NBA is discussed, like, that's not going to be everybody's favorite thing. Not a huge issue for me. I'm okay with it. For the record, but this might just be the online stuff too. It might just be, in the past, people might have thought about this, but we just didn't know what anyone thought. And now there's like, people seem to be completely like these fan accounts that are so in love with one player that it's almost like political, where it's like, all right, you know, let's get the surrogates going here. Jokic sucked in game three. Like, let's start pumping out the
real
content.
Grassroots movement.
The,
yeah.
Yeah. Let's get the clips. Like, you know, it's the same thing as Succession. When Hugh goes in there and it's the congressional hearings and the senator, he's like, all right, let's get the surrogates ready. They call him Meth Head Santa because he so rarely delivers. And so then it's like, you've hired all these people to tweet out all this messaging. And that's the whole scene in Succession, is that it's these people that are inside of the hearings are going like, all right, get the surrogates up, like, get them up and working. That is what is happening now in the NBA, and it's been happening now for years, where if somebody's a huge SGA fan, it's like, all right, cool, Jokic sucked, like, let's get the messaging out. And they're just firing out the stuff, and eventually it gets kind of picked up and people start arguing with it. I'll reference it every now and then. I try not to, because like, every now and then when I have a point, it's like, oh, straw man much? You'd be like, do you have a laptop? Have you been out in the streets?
You heard of
being
online?
Do you see what's going on? We're the good guys.
Can I just add, well, one, I think it went from that was in the Embiid crew, and now it's the SGA crew, right? So there's two different factions fighting against one guy.
Right.
It's kind of funny. And
one guy's still fighting the Embiid fight. Good for him. But for the most part, the Embiid people have gone, hey, we can't do this right now.
Yeah. They're like the Japanese World War II guys that didn't know the war was over. They're just still fighting.
Somebody's walking over,
still
like,
firing out tweets.
Yeah. Like, is there a place to sell sunscreen around here? I'll never surrender.
But it, I think it's, and I say this as a Jokic guy, but I think it's because Jokic is put on a pedestal. Like, if we're being honest, like, Jokic, like, not you, not a lot of people are like, hey, this is the greatest offensive player ever. You know, there's just a lot of things have been said about him, and it's like, oh, okay, one title. And like, so it's kind of easy to be like,
yeah,
oh, this is your king.
It.
This is your guy. And like, right. What's going on here? So I think that's part of it too, just to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Cause I mean, when it's good, you're just like, this is ridiculous what this guy is able to do out there. But then it's kind of like, when you talk about somebody that way, it's as if they're never supposed to have a bad game. And I mean, the inverse happens as well. It's like, there'll be a player I don't like. And I joke with you about this all the time. It's like, I don't think it means he's going to score 0 points every game for the rest of his fucking life. Like, there's guys I don't like. I know that they're going to get 30 in a playoff game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean like, and then it turns into like, oh, I thought this guy sucked. And I mean, we could dig back deep. Like, I can run through the great ones and be like, look how terrible this series was. Like, this Kobe's got a couple of them that you're just like, what was that? And it's before we did this, or they did this, is probably the better way to say it. Mm-hmm. If you want to hit us up with some questions, our NBA mailbag is nbamailbagrr@gmail.com. Please subscribe to our YouTube page and pods this week on Wednesday and Thursday. And then we'll be back with a good 10 minutes after game 6 of Denver, Minnesota on Friday. So 5 days a week here.